Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, July 29th, 2020, continuing with Section A. Hayes presents 2020-21 budget. County buildings getting new air conditioning. Ector County Commissioners Tuesday accepted Judge Debbie Hayes' proposed 2020-21 budget for $67.1 million in general fund expenditures, an increase over the current fiscal year's $66.5 million, although they expect to change her plan during deliberations beginning next week. This is basically a mirror of what it was this year, Hayes said at the 10 a.m. meeting. Departmental budgets include the district clerk's office, $1,719,670 for the year ending September 30th, and $1,735,710 in 2020-21. District attorney's office, $3,610,341 to $3,507,778. County Clerk's Office, $1,492,223 to $1,448,390. County Attorney's Office, $1,835,317 to $1,943,794. Tax Assessor Collector's Office, $925,097 to $905,699. Sheriff's Office, $9,491,789 to $9,585,704. And the county's detention center, $13,744,277 to $13,502,524. No change is projected for the commissioners or judge who earn $60,218 and $119,334 per year, respectively. In other business, the court adopted a $6.9 million contract with Johnson Controls to replace all 87 old Freon air conditioning units in county buildings and replace them with new units. Appearing with two Johnson Controls representatives, Maintenance Director Charles Pierce said they had worked on the contract for 18 months, planning also to replace all lights with light-emitting diodes and to install two chillers at the courthouse. Pierce said all the buildings will get new air conditioning except the library. I know we need to upgrade everything, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said. 2 weeks ago, when we had triple-digit temperatures, everybody at the courthouse was on their knees praying for the new chillers, Hayes said. On a 3-2 vote, with Hayes and Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons dissenting in favor of maintaining the county's hiring freeze, the commissioners granted purchasing agent Lucy Soto's request to hire an assistant, with Soto introducing UTPB Public Administration Master's Degree candidate Daniel Ruiz as her choice. County Attorney Dusty Gallivan protested, saying the court 2 weeks ago had rejected his request for an investigator and a proposal to hire a deputy clerk in the tax assessor collector's office. Yes, but you hired your investigator anyway, Childers rejoined her. The court also approved joint resolutions with the City of Odessa to hold the November 3rd general election, issue a notice of election, appoint early voting clerks, set early voting for October 20th through 31st, and designate election day voting centers. Okayed applying for unclaimed property capital credits. approved specifications for departmental uniforms, okayed a $3,200 budget amendment to cover the burials of indigent people, approved a $15,000 budget amendment for medical commitments, approved a $20,000 line item transfer for self-funded liability claims settlements, and approved an $865 line item transfer for furniture in the 70th District Court. Man charged with exposing himself to teenage girl. The 31-year-old man who was arrested a week ago after he reportedly sexually assaulted a 34-year-old woman has been arrested again after he was sexually inappropriate with a teenage girl. Raul Lerma Jr. was charged with indecency with a child, family violence, a second-degree felony, and indecency with a child, exposure, family violence, a third-degree felony. On July 21st, officers were dispatched to the Walmart located on Loop 338 on the west side of Odessa, an Odessa Police Department affidavit stated. The victim, a 17-year-old girl, reportedly told police that numerous times Lerma exposed himself to her between the ages of 13 to 17. The girl reported several times Lerma attempted to convince her to have sex. The girl also stated that Lerma attempted to bribe her with a new phone when she was 13 years old in exchange for oral sex, the affidavit stated. Lerma was reportedly interviewed and denied the allegations, but verbally admitted the girl has seen his penis on multiple occasions. Lerma was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Saturday, jail records show. He had two bonds totaling $40,000 and posted bail Sunday. Obituaries and death notices for Wednesday, July 29th. Clarence Barton, C.B. Choate, Jr. C.B. Choate, 76, of Odessa, passed away July 19th at home. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, July 31st at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home with Pastor Byron McWilliams of First Baptist Church officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. C.B. was born in El Paso to Clarence Sr. and Mary Choate, July 26th, 1943. He married Kathy Lee Neves in 1973 in Odessa. C.B. is preceded in death by his parents, Clarence and Mary, brother Thomas A. Choate, and sister Alice Mahurin. He is survived by his wife of 51 years, Kathy, son Jimmy Shane Choate and partner Billy Waldron of Houston, daughter Stacy Choate Espinosa and spouse Christopher of Odessa, two grandsons and two great-grandchildren. Arrangements are entrusted to Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Doris Madden Purdy. Doris Madden Purdy, 88, passed away July 25th. She was born December 10th, 1931, to Luther Benjamin and Leona Jewel Isham Stringer in Pueblo, Colorado. She married Marvin Madden in 1946. Marvin passed away in 1994, and she met and later married Raymond Purdy in 1996. Raymond passed away in 2016. Doris is preceded in death by her parents, her husbands, and a grandson, Kevin McKinney. She is survived by her son, Raymond Madden of Odessa, and daughter, Marlene McKinney, and husband, Mike of Borger, daughter-in-law, Debbie Madden of Littleton, Colorado, Two sisters, Ada Newberry of Amarillo and Wilma Brown and husband Ray of Odessa. Two stepsons, Kim Purdy of Odessa and Kenny Purdy of Carlsbad, New Mexico. Two stepdaughters, Marla Purdy of Odessa and Tiffany von Rosenberg and husband John of Cedar Hill. Nine grandchildren, 18 great-grandchildren, 8 great-great-grandchildren, and many nieces and nephews. A visitation was held Tuesday, July 28th at Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home. Services were held Wednesday, July 27th at Cumberland Presbyterian Church with burial to follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Death notices. Umberto Arenivas. Umberto Arenivas, 60, of Odessa, died Saturday, July 25th. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Thursday, July 30th at St. Anthony Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Emily Danielle Emmy Atwood. Emmy Atwood, 25, died Monday, July 27th. Services are pending with Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Alice Bell Watson Burleson Bennett. Alice Bell Watson Burleson Bennett, 91, of Odessa, died Monday, July 27th in Midland. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. John Russell Duncan. John Russell Duncan, 28, of Odessa, died Sunday, July 26th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Berthina Pegues Holbert. Berthina Holbert, 83, died Saturday, July 25th in Midland. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Pantaleon Medina. Pantaleon Medina, 72, died Sunday, July 26th. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Betty Jo Owens. Betty Jo Owens, 91, of Lubbock, died Tuesday, July 28th. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Andrea Romero. Andrea Romero, 68, of Midland, died Thursday, July 23rd in Midland. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. August 1st at Templo Peniel's, 611 South Terrell in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens in Midland. Arrangements are by Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home of Midland.
This is the local and state page. This article is entitled "Abbott Extends Early Voting for November Election" by Patrick Svitek, Texas Tribune. Governor Greg Abbott on Monday extended the early voting period for the November election by 6 days, citing continued challenges posed by the coronavirus epidemic. Early voting for the November 3rd election will now begin October 13th instead of October 19th. The end date remains October 30th. The extension of the early voting period is not a surprise. During a TV interview in late May, Abbott said he would add more time to the early voting period for the November election, as he did for the primary runoff election earlier this month, but did not elaborate. Last week, Harris County Clerk Chris Hollins asked Abbott to provide more details so that election officials could have more time to prepare. In a letter to the governor, Hollins requested that Abbott move the start date to October 13th at the latest. For the runoffs, Abbott doubled the early voting period, shifting the start date from July 6th to June 29th. The end date was July 10th. Abbott and other Texas GOP leaders continue to resist a push by Democrats to expand mail-in voting. Democrats failed to convince the courts to expand mail-in voting for the runoffs, but are pressing forward with their efforts for the general election. But the Monday announcement from the governor gave eligible mail-in voters more time to turn in their completed ballots in person if they would like to do so. Current law allows those voters to submit their ballots to the early voting clerk's office in person instead of mailing them in, but only while polls are open on election day. Abbott's latest move expands that option to the entire early voting period. Democrats said Abbott's latest moves were still not enough to create a safer environment for voting in November. Abbott's decision to extend early voting by 6 days is exactly like his COVID-19 response, the bare minimum and not fully thought through, State Democratic Party Gilberto Hinojosa said in a statement. After the runoffs, county election officials have been anticipating considerable challenges for the November election with a similarly extended early voting period. Counties reported a shortage of poll workers ahead of the runoffs, leading them to shutter planned polling places at the last minute. Plus, a new state law bans the use of mobile or temporary voting sites, meaning all early voting sites must remain open for the full early voting period. Work for poll workers has significantly increased in difficulty given the personal protection measures, social distancing, and general voter and worker safety that they now must be cognizant of and practice, said Chris Davis, elections administrator for Williamson County. The presidential election and higher turnout expected only makes that work harder. So if the early voting term is significantly extended, many counties will have to consider split shifts for our early voting poll worker teams. Extending early voting has been the main way the state has adjusted voting practices during the pandemic. Local officials also worked during the runoffs to sanitize the polls and enforce social distancing requirements in lines. Masks are encouraged, but not required at polling places. In addition to the presidential race, Texans will vote November 3rd on Republican U.S. Senator John Cornyn's re-election, as well as a host of nationally targeted down-ballot contests for the U.S. House and Texas House, where Democrats are pushing to take the majority. This is the business and oil section. This article is entitled "Gasoline Demand Fades at Height of Driving Season" by Jeffrey Baer, Jack Whittles, and Saket Sundria from Bloomberg. A sharp rebound in gasoline consumption that helped to drive oil prices higher appears to be running out of steam, a development that should be a cause for concern across the petroleum industry. In the U.S., by far the world's biggest gasoline market, the nation's best measure of demand has flattened out during what's meant to be peak driving season, when millions of Americans normally take to the roads for their summer vacations. Asia, which exited lockdowns and led a recovery in buying of the fuel, is now starting to stutter too. The situation still looks a little brighter in Europe, but the region's refineries are firing up their gasoline-making units at a time when vital buying interest from across the Atlantic appears to be ebbing. What matters for gasoline matters for oil. Just a few weeks ago, it looked like demand for oil for fuel was making a strong comeback as people used their cars to drive to work in order to avoid public transport. The recovery was expected to help push global oil demand back up toward pre-pandemic levels by year end. Now that optimism is starting to wane. COVID is turning back the clock on demand, said Robert Yauger, director of the futures division at Mizuho Securities, adding that the strength or otherwise of U.S. gasoline consumption over the next 6 weeks will determine the short-term future of the global oil market. Look at what happened. We saw demand level out in the middle of July. That is the peak of driving season. That is not where things should be based on what we know. This has the potential to be bad, bad, bad. Gasoline is important because it normally accounts for almost a third of what the world's oil refineries churn out, meaning that if demand falters, then the plant's own need to procure crude will ultimately slow as well. Critically for them, another mainstay of consumption, jet fuel, still remains well below peak levels because the coronavirus has had such a big effect on international travel. With less jet fuel needed, refiners have been switching production to other fuels like diesel, pressuring those markets. Excluding benchmark, American oil plunged below zero back in April, when pressure on storage spaces saw the most immediate contracts collapse as they expired. Gasoline has seen bigger price moves, both down and up, this year than crude. U.S. gasoline demand, as reflected by products supplied, likely will not return above 9 million barrels a day until 2021, according to consultant Facts Global Energy. Demand for last week was predicted using mobile phone data at 8.87 million barrels a day by Descartes Labs. The second month gasoline contract plunged by over $54 a barrel between January and March, before recovering by about $31. For the comparable West Texas Intermediate futures, this year's peak-to-trough slump was about $42 a barrel, with the low point coming about a month later. It has since rallied by about $20. While the plateauing of U.S. demand may be the most visible cause for concern for bulls, New York-traded gasoline is the world's main futures contract for the fuel. Other regions are looking less positive, too. China, India. Asia's demand was among the first to rebound, and most analysts had predicted it would see the biggest jump as more people used their cars and motorbikes to commute and travel instead of public transport. The return of lockdowns, coupled with flooding, has forced Chinese fuel producers to ramp up gasoline exports as stockpiles stay swollen and domestic demand ebbs. The nation's average daily exports in July are currently at the highest level in 4 months. Shipments average 294,400 barrels a day this month through to July 16th, the highest since March, and up from 226,400 barrels a day in June, according to energy analytics firm Vortexa Limited. Energy Aspects Limited sees exports climbing to 350,000 to 400,000 barrels a day this quarter. India's consumption dropped again in the first half of this month after increasing consistently since a nationwide lockdown was eased in May. Sales for July 1st to 15th dropped 7% from a month prior and were 13% lower from the year earlier. The on-and-off imposition of lockdowns in several cities and provinces as virus cases continue to surge and a weaker economy are affecting demand. With fuel demand heading lower again, top refiners are shutting plants for maintenance, affecting about a fifth of the nation's processing capacity. Closures of an estimated 50 million tons of the nation's annual refining capacity are being undertaken unusually at peak of rainy season as stockpiles remain very high. In Europe, the recovery in margins has stalled and the fuel is now worth only a few cents more than the crude oil it's made from, well below the seasonal norm. Data for the UK and Spain, both hit hard by the virus, do point to strengthening demand. But Europe is long gasoline, and so any significant decline in U.S. consumption, a key export market, will strengthen the bear's case. This article is entitled Oil Closes Near $41 a Barrel by Anna Koh from Bloomberg. Oil traded near $41 a barrel as investors shifted their focus to domestic supply, with expectations for another build in already swelling U.S. stockpiles, countering anticipation of a dovish statement from the Federal Reserve. West Texas Intermediate fell 56 cents to close at $41.04. Futures in New York were little changed after declining 1.3% on Tuesday. Analysts in a Bloomberg survey expect a 450,000 barrel gain in U.S. crude stockpiles. While the industry-funded American Petroleum Institute reported a 6.83 million barrel decrease in oil supplies, it posted a rise of 1.08 million barrels in gasoline inventories. The U.S. Central Bank is set to announce its rate decision Wednesday. Consultant Rystad Energy highlighted the risk to crude's recovery from a record glut earlier this year, saying it expects oil supply to eclipse demand for the next 4 months. The API also reported 187,000 barrel build in distillate supplies. Following the swift rebound from April lows, crude prices have struggled to find direction in recent months, with U.S. benchmark futures bouncing in a tight range around $40 a barrel as the resurgent pandemic sours prospects for a demand recovery. In the U.S., New Jersey's transmission rate hit its highest in 3 months. Elsewhere, countries from the Netherlands to Malaysia are facing a rise in new cases, and China's virus cluster has spread to Beijing. Meanwhile, a sharp rebound in gasoline consumption that helped to drive oil prices higher appears to be running out of steam globally as U.S. virus cases continue to rise. Oil consulting firm FGE said that U.S. gasoline demand will have a hard time reaching 9 million barrels a day this year, and the International Air Transport Association's chief economist expects that future demand for jet fuel will not catch up with the pre-COVID-19 forecast for at least 5 years. This column is entitled U.S. Well-Positioned to Supply Clean Energy by Ann Bradbury, American Exploration and Production Council. Ann Bradbury is CEO of the American Exploration and Production Council. This week, as President Trump visits the Permian Basin, it's important to appreciate just how far our country has come in a short period of time with regard to our domestic oil and natural gas production, just how much that has benefited the U.S. and the world. In his 2006 State of the Union address, former President George W. Bush stressed the importance of affordable energy to keeping America competitive, and warned that unless the U.S. pursued significant technological advancements, we would continue to rely on oil imports from unstable parts of the world. As energy importers at this time, the U.S. dependence on foreign oil put us on our backs. Then came the shale revolution. Our industry, the independent producers of oil and natural gas, authored this great American energy revolution. Our technological innovation and grit literally changed the landscape of global energy to provide affordable, reliable energy to America and the world, and support good-paying jobs here at home. In fact, oil and gas production supports about 2 million direct jobs, 1 million of which are upstream onshore jobs. And in places like the Permian, it's abundantly clear the significant indirect benefits our industry provides to communities, supporting small businesses, schools, roads, hospitals, and much more. As production of oil and gas in America rose over the past decade, imports declined. And the energy we do import increasingly comes from nations with stronger diplomatic relations and greater stability. In 2019, for the first time in history, the United States became a net exporter of energy. The combination of our perseverance and the regulatory environment fostered by the Trump administration has achieved something once thought out of reach: American energy security. Most recently, the White House Council on Environmental Quality finalized a rule to increase the efficiency of the federal permitting process and reduce the time it takes to safely construct oil and natural gas infrastructure projects while protecting the environment. The White House's modernization and clarification of the National Environmental Policy Act could not come at a better time, as this will allow the U.S. to safely build energy infrastructure, provide job opportunities to American communities, and help expand our national economy. The Trump EPA and Interior and Energy Departments have also taken action in the past few years to foster collaboration among the federal government, state and local governments, and American businesses. For example, EPA's proposed ozone standard aims to protect public health without imposing unnecessary costs on American jobs or the economy. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service proposed a rule to define the scope of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act to provide regulatory certainty to the public, industries, states, and tribes. And the U.S. Energy Department has been working with our industry throughout the COVID-19 crisis to identify and support storage opportunities to help alleviate oversupply in the marketplace. The administration and members of Congress who support American workers understand the importance of American energy and the importance of safely developing oil and natural gas here in Texas, as well as in New Mexico, Wyoming, Colorado, Pennsylvania, North Dakota, and even California. The production of American energy supports good-paying jobs here at home and promotes a cleaner environment. We also lead the world in the cleanest and safest production of oil and natural gas. Our companies have the lowest emissions in the world. According to the EPA, from 2005 to 2018, total U.S. energy-related CO2 emissions fell by 12%. In contrast, global energy-related emissions increased nearly 24% during this period. EPA's most recent annual report on air quality shows that from 1990 to 2019, emissions of air pollutants continued to decline, including nitrogen oxides dropping 65%, particulate matter dropping 36%, sulfur dioxide dropping 91%, and volatile organic compounds going down 47%. As the U.S. now leads the world in oil and natural gas production, we are uniquely positioned to meet the world's growing demand for energy, support our country's economic recovery, and promote a cleaner environment. But that depends on collaborative relationships among American businesses and elected officials, sensible regulations, and respect for our industry and the workers who are committed to providing our communities and our country with affordable, reliable, and American oil and natural gas. This is the opinion page. This is a column called Our View. It is entitled Midland, Remain Focused on Academics, Not Name, by Stuart Doreen, editor. Will there be ramifications because a school's name will be changed in Midland? I'm afraid so. This is what was waiting for me Tuesday in my Facebook Messenger account. My well-beloved Robert E. Lee High School in Midland, Texas, has just had a big slap in the face by the Communist MISD board. They voted to change the name. This is what communists do. They seek to destroy history. It would serve them right, the MISD board and all those that screamed change the name, to Donald Trump High School. Just saying. I was and will always be a proud Lee High School rebel, class of 1974. The person added the following, there is going to be outrage, anything unlike anything Midland has ever seen. Let that soak in for a second. Of all the things that have happened in Midland, someone believes changing the school's name will keep people from supporting their school district and that this will bring outrage unlike Midland has ever seen. My response to that person was, if Midlanders stand in the way of improving education because of the name of a high school, then we have bigger issues in our community. That's sad, really. I completely understand some people might not like that the school will be renamed. I thought board member Brian Murray did an outstanding job of talking about the family aspect of being a Lee rebel, but he was outvoted. Still, the threat is out there that renaming the school could be a hurdle in the community engaging positively in Midland's public education system. Our community really must be better than that. And I expect Midland will. I have been on the record that our schools should be named after local and regional people who have made an impact in Midland or the state of Texas. I also called for resolution, one way or the other, on this matter of Robert E. Lee High School, so our community could move on with the tall task of education reform and dealing with education in the age of coronavirus. We got resolution. The high school will be renamed for a prominent and influential Midlander, such as Laura Bush or General Tommy Franks. Yes, we can do that, and if needed, rename the elementary school or a Midland family. I believe Midlanders will rally around students who attend this renamed school, as well as other schools across the city. Students are of importance, not the school's name, mascot, or colors. No matter what your position is about the Robert E. Lee High School name, if your number one priority isn't about school performance and being there for tens of thousands of students, then shame on you. If it takes a school name to bring outrage unlike Midland has ever seen, and not the fact that our district's performance ranks among the lowest for any in the state, then maybe our community's issues are greater than any of us could ever have imagined. I still hope our community's best days are in front of us, and it can be that way, no matter the name of the high school on Neely Avenue.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, July 29, 2020. Local, Biden backers show support. Exa-Kay Luman uses tape to secure a Biden sign to her car Tuesday evening before a parade through Midland. The Midland County Democratic Party distributed Joe Biden for President signs Tuesday. Congressional candidate John Mark Hogg joined supporters who drove through local neighborhoods. Biden and Hogg signs will be available for pickup at the party's headquarters, 601 South Main Street, noon to 4 p.m. August 8. The party and Midland Young Democrats will be hosting a blood drive, registering voters, and passing out mail-in ballot applications. Tax-free weekend is August 7 through 9. School will be starting next month, and that means it's time for back-to-school shopping. The sales tax holiday in Texas is August 7 through 9. Items that qualify as tax-free include most clothing and footwear, school supplies, and backpacks. Purchases may be made in-store or online, according to the State Comptroller's Office website. For more information and for a complete list of items that may be purchased tax-free, go to comptroller.texas.gov. Red Cross needs volunteers. The American Red Cross needs volunteers as the agency prepares for hurricane season amid the pandemic, said Tracy Austin, executive director of the Permian Basin chapter. The coronavirus pandemic will make it challenging to deploy trained disaster volunteers from other parts of the country should an emergency occur. In light of this, the Red Cross is asking you to be ready to help Texas communities, she said in a press release. To learn about available volunteer opportunities, visit redcross.org. For more information or to volunteer, go to redcross.org/volunteer today or contact local volunteer specialist Stacy Pickett at stacy.pickett2@redcross.org or 425-7637. Washington Pool is open today. The city's pools, Doug Russell and Washington Family Aquatic Center, are open on alternating days during coronavirus pandemic. Washington is open today for 2 3-hour sessions, noon to 3 p.m. and 4 to 7 p.m. Passes are $3 and go on sale at the pool 30 minutes before opening. Passes are good only for the day of purchase. Gun raffle to benefit Dog Rescue. Dogs Rescue RS is raising money for its new facility, a gate, cement pad for the building that was donated, and plumbing for the building. Volunteers have built a fence around the property, and the site has been prepared for the concrete pad. The nonprofit's vice president, Dana Tinley, said they need $28,000 to complete the facility site, which will house animals until they are sent to other shelters out of state. The rescue is hosting the 13 Gun Bazaar raffle with Amazing Grace Pet Rescue. 13 guns are being raffled. Tickets are $40 each, or three for $100. Names of the 13 winners will be drawn at 9 p.m. Saturday on Facebook Live. Tickets can be purchased via PayPal at https://www.paypal.me/shawnblair69 or Venmo at DRRU-19. Guns may be picked up from Alley Outdoors. Donations may be sent to Dog Rescue RS, 4416 Briarwood Avenue, Suite 1110, PMB 17, Midland, Texas 79707, or visit GoFundMe.com. Correction. The Midland County Commissioners Court discussed the issue of giving raises to elected officials, but did not take any action. The headline in today's edition indicates a vote was taken. The Reporter-Telegram regrets the error. Health and Wellness. Breast Center will begin offering genetic testing. Jennifer Dumeyer, Midland Health. Want to know more? The Breast Center is located at 5615 Deauville Boulevard. For more information or to schedule a mammogram, call 221-3627. Our main goals at the Breast Center are first and foremost to detect breast cancer as early as possible, and secondly, to provide personalized care. To provide this personalized care, we must really get to know our patients. There are many ways that we provide personalized care. We recommend that women who have dense breast tissue have a screening dense breast ultrasound. Women who do not have dense breast tissue do not require this test. One size definitely does not fit all. Another way that we provide personalized care is by assessing a patient's lifetime risk of developing breast cancer. If a patient is at an increased lifetime risk, they may require additional testing, such as an MRI. Family history plays a huge part in a patient's lifetime risk score. We are going to take personalized care to a new level beginning in August. The Breast Center will be offering genetic testing. Only about 10% of patients diagnosed with breast cancer have a genetic mutation. However, these patients' risk of developing breast cancer sometime in their lifetime is exponentially higher than other patients without a genetic mutation. Let's take a look at how genetic testing is going to be done at the Breast Center. Because not everyone needs genetic testing, each patient will be asked to answer questions about personal and family history. From the answers to these questions, a lifetime risk score will be calculated, and we will know whether the patient qualifies for genetic testing. If a patient is a candidate for genetic testing, they will watch an educational video and speak to a genetic counselor on the telephone. Then we will visit with the patient to answer any further questions. If the patient chooses to have genetic testing, they will be notified beforehand if there are any out-of-pocket expenses. There is financial assistance available through Myriad, the company providing the genetic testing. The results will be returned to the Breast Center in a few weeks. At this time, the patient will return to the Breast Center to discuss these results and what they mean in terms of preventative testing. If the patient needs to be followed by a physician for these recommendations, we will facilitate that referral. Having a high-risk breast center here in Midland assures our community and our patients once again that there's no place like home when it comes to your breast imaging and breast care needs. Jennifer Dumeyer is a nurse navigator at Midland Health and has postgraduate certification in genetics and genomics from Stanford University. When timing is everything. MMH honored for treatment of heart attack patients, from staff reports. Midland Memorial Hospital has received an award for its treatment of heart attack patients, according to a press release from a hospital spokeswoman. The Mission Lifeline NSTEMI Gold Quality Achievement Award is presented for implementing specific quality improvement measures outlined by the American Heart Association for the treatment of people who suffer heart attacks, according to the release. The goal of the AHA's Mission Lifeline program is to reduce barriers to prompt treatment for heart attacks, beginning with the 911 call, the EMS transport, and continuing through hospital treatment and discharge. The initiative provides tools, training, and other resources to support heart attack care following protocols from the most recent evidence-based treatment guidelines. MMH earned the award by meeting specific criteria and standards of performance for the quick and appropriate treatment of NSTEMI heart attack patients by providing emergency procedures to reestablish blood flow to blocked arteries when needed, according to the release. MMH is dedicated to providing optimal care for heart attack patients, said Tasha Richardson, public relations manager. We are pleased to be recognized for our dedication and achievements in cardiac care through Mission Lifeline. We commend MMH for this award in recognition for following evidence-based guidelines for timely heart attack treatment, said Dr. Tim Henry, chair of the Mission Lifeline Acute Coronary Syndrome Subcommittee, in a statement. We applaud the significant institutional commitment to their critical role in the system of care for quickly and appropriately treating heart attack patients. Commentary: Too many people delay care because of virus, by Dr. Sudip Bose. Over the past several months, COVID-19 has become a central focus in all of our lives. We anxiously await the news each evening with hopes that the numbers of cases and hospitalizations are decreasing. Here in Midland, we are taking the necessary precautions to stop the spread of the virus, but community transmission continues to rise as the main source of exposure. As we work together to flatten the curve, it seems the virus is affecting every decision we make. But there is a bit of an untold story here, one that we, emergency health care providers, have been watching unfold over the past several weeks. It's a situation that everyone must be aware of. While I'm proud to report that our community has worked together to wear masks, social distance, and stay home, people have also inadvertently stopped getting critical emergency health care. In fact, a recent national survey found nearly half of Americans have delayed medical care because of COVID-19, and 11% of those who delayed care saw worsened health conditions as a result. Similarly, emergency room volumes across the country decreased 21% in June 2020 compared to June 2019, which is better than April and May, when volumes were down 48% and 42%, respectively, compared to levels a year earlier. Here in Midland, we have seen a similar trend of emergency room visits and EMS requests decreasing significantly. As a result, people are literally dying at home simply because they are afraid to go to an emergency room. In many cases, these consequences are entirely avoidable with proper, timely medical care. For example, if not addressed immediately, a treatable heart attack can turn into a lifelong heart disease, or worse, death. Following the initial COVID-19 outbreak, New York City reported an 800% increase in at-home deaths because of fear of contracting the virus in hospitals. The thought of loss of life is troubling enough. Imagine knowing that loss could have been prevented with a short drive to the emergency room. The most common and life-threatening delays in care are from patients with heart disease, stroke, and sepsis. Any delay in seeking care for these conditions places the patient's life at risk and can have massive ramifications for their future health. Stroke victims, in particular, have shown a dangerous trend of delaying care during the pandemic. New research shows patients are arriving at hospitals and treatment centers an average of 160 minutes later during COVID-19. When every second counts, this is a matter of life and death. COVID-19 may have changed daily lives in many ways, but emergency rooms have stood and remain a constant pillar for communities to rely on. With patient safety always the top priority, emergency care providers are going above and beyond in new health protocols. Just some of the steps being taken include rigorous sanitation protocols, stringent screening processes, mobile units for patient care, and procedures and separate areas for those suspected of having COVID-19. Nothing is more important than protecting patients' lives. Emergency medicine physicians will continue to go the extra mile, taking every precaution possible to ensure a safe, reliable space for every patient who needs it. Let me be clear. There is absolutely no reason to delay care under any circumstances. If you are experiencing chest pain, shortness of breath, weakness, tingling or blurred vision, or any other symptom you feel is an emergency, please seek immediate care. A health emergency is just that, an emergency. It requires urgent, specialized care, and there should be no question, hesitation, or delay in getting that care. As much as we work together to battle the pandemic, we must also work together to ensure proper health care is not neglected. We all want to be safe and do what is necessary to keep our fellow community members safe. However, that does not mean putting your life or a loved one's life at risk. You must trust we are here to provide the right care at the right time, at the right place, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dr. Sudip Bose is an emergency physician in Midland and a member of the Texas College of Emergency Physicians.
Hello, this is Michael reading from the Odessa American. Be wary of rapid gains in waist size. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Wednesday, July 29th. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm a 60-year-old female who went through menopause at age 45. My belly has blown up like a balloon, and I am often asked by people in public if I am pregnant. This is embarrassing. I have tried numerous exercises, and they all put a strain on my lower back and cause pain. Could you recommend an effective exercise for women 60 years and older to reduce protruding belly fat? Answer. There is no exercise regimen that can specifically remove fat from one part of the body, despite what advertisements say. Some people will preferentially gain weight around their abdomen, perhaps due to hormone levels, and that fat can be very stubborn to get rid of. It takes patience and lots of time, a healthy diet with appropriate portion sizes, and regular exercise. However, I am concerned to hear you say your belly has blown up. Very rapid gain in inches around the middle in a woman, especially over 50, always makes me concerned about conditions that deposit fluid in the abdomen. Ovarian cancer is the most concerning, and although it isn't very likely in any given individual, it is far too common and should be at least considered. You should ask your doctor about an ultrasound or CT scan, and if an evaluation for ascites, A-S-C-I-T-E-S, that's the term for fluid in the peritoneum, the abdominal cavity where your organs are, turns out okay, your doctor might give personalized advice or refer you to someone who can help with nutrition and exercise.
Dear Abby, man smitten by second cousin hides relationship from wife. Dear Abby, 3 months ago, my husband ran into a second cousin he hadn't seen in 40 years. They were close for a short time during high school and saw each other a couple of times after that. I was not aware until recently that he had looked her up on social media and has been communicating with her every day since then. I didn't think much of it when he did tell me, until one night when he stayed on the computer with her until 3 a.m. He has lied to me about the number of times he has been online with her, and if she calls or texts, he tells me it is someone else. She sent him pictures, which I saw, yet he denied receiving them. One time he forgot to sign off on a message he sent, and of course I read it. To my shock, he was confiding a lot of things he had done while married to me that I was unaware of. It hurt me deeply, and I told him so. Recently I was in the hospital. When I called him a couple of times at night, he claimed he didn't pick up because he was tired. I found out later he was on the computer with her. I have asked him more than once why this relationship is so private. And he says they are just friends. But when I asked to see some of the things he has written to her, he refused to show me. I said, fine, then I will ask her. Well, he blew up. When I told him it hurts me that he spends so much time with her in the evening, he didn't give an answer. Am I overreacting? If so, can you please tell me how to settle down and deal with what is happening? Cousin Trouble in the Midwest. Dear Cousin Trouble, you are not overreacting. It's time to do what you said you were going to do. Call the woman and ask her what has been going on. After she fills you in, ask yourself if you still want to be married to a man who has cheated on you emotionally and probably physically. If you feel there is any hope of saving your marriage, offer your husband the option of seeing a marriage and family therapist together. However, knowing he has no compunction about lying to you or any respect for your feelings, you might prefer to simply consult a lawyer about what your next step should be. Dear Abby, I'm an 18-year-old woman. My parents are divorced. My father says I should be out having fun, and I owe no explanations to anyone. My mother, on the other hand, is very strict. I respect her wishes and don't do what most people my age would do. I try to be very careful with what I say in any conversation with her, but it always ends up with her very angry toward me. I want to live my life, or at least try to. What do I do? Clueless teen in Texas. Dear teen, an 18-year-old should be carefree and engaged in self-discovery, but people of every age are having to hunker down and curtail their social activities these days because their lives could depend on it. And as to owing no explanations to anyone, until you are self-supporting and on your own, you will have to be accountable. Your mother may be feeling insecure because her daughter is now a young adult rather than her little girl who needs protecting. She may also be reacting to the advice your dad is doling out. You are going to have to figure out what triggers your mother's anger during those conversations and find a happy medium. Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label that astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Leo and a moon in Scorpio until 3:25 a.m., when the moon enters Sagittarius. Happy birthday for Wednesday, July 29, 2020. Observant and concept-oriented, you are astute in sizing up those around you. This year, you embark on a project about a particular group. It will be a masterpiece. You will be called upon to defend it professionally. If single, you may be too busy to date until November. If attached, you are especially proud of your partner, and vice versa. You are protective of your family. Cancer is the most loyal. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 3 stars. Today emphasizes social connections, teamwork, and the news media. Transformations are evolving around you. Be flexible and observant. Questions of loyalty and legality can arise. By tonight, any confusion should dissipate. Tonight, a new associate calls you to speak personally. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. The hand of fate is at work. Today ushers in a refreshing shift. Dreams and signs offer valuable guidance. Your thoughts might dwell upon mysteries and afterlife communication. Any shadowy undercurrents of tension fade. You are ready to move forward. Tonight, back to the world. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. You'll be able to extricate yourself from persons or situations that have been draining your energy and resources. Focus on what you would like to release. Reclaim your freedom in the peaceful light of day. Tonight, no more false starts with friendships or goals. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Observe how anger or stress can impact your well-being. Mild exercise can help restore balance and provide a wholesome release of aggravation. Wear a hat and sunscreen when outdoors in the summer heat. Tonight, take a long, relaxing bath. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Today promises romance. This can involve contact with someone you knew long ago. Accept and issue invitations. Honor the love with an arrangement of sunflowers, your astrological flower. It represents following the spiritual light. Tonight, have a sunflower party. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 4 stars. Family members share thoughts regarding the future. A real estate transaction, home repair, or decorating project could need attention. Sentiment and memories are evoked. Today is beneficial for a healing ritual. Tonight, a family meeting and discussion over dinner goes late. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 2 stars. You will be juggling a variety of different projects. A transportation need might be involved in this. A recurring situation involving a sibling or old pal needs attention. Clear communication holds the key to smoothing over any differences. Tonight, positive affirmations are very effective. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. Today can attract intriguing associates who don't use the most sound financial judgment. Avoid overextending yourself with high-risk ventures. Advice offered by others should be considered carefully. Stay cautious and in survival mode. Tonight, trust your own instincts over your compassion. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. You approach life as a game to be played and won, and today you certainly win. A renewed zest for life is ushered in with favorable influences. This inspiring pattern continues all day. Leadership skills are strongly present. Tonight, celebrate as only a Sagittarian can. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Today creates an odd, unbalanced sequence of events. Be observant and flexible. Your intuition guides you past a dilemma. This also promotes creative expression through writing and communication or art. Tonight, staying up late and burning the midnight oil. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 5 stars. It is a great day for networking. Trust your intuition regarding new acquaintances. New types of associates are included in your social circle. You will explore many different options concerning your many goals. Tonight, approach a new associate with the promise of friendship. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 2 stars. Today favors enthusiasm and motivation, as well as some anger issues related to money. Hard work will bring financial rewards. Diplomacy is a must in coping with complex social situations. A touch of humor and tolerance helps you greatly. Tonight, relax and unwind. Born today, actress Clara Bow, 1905, anchor Peter Jennings, 1938, director Ken Burns, 1953.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.